Thank you for coming to this panel discussion on the Great Lakes Compact. To those of you new to Wisconsin, my apologies for the lack of snow today. But if you hang around for a few hours, I'm sure we can accommodate you. I'm Ernie Franzen. I'm the Associate Editorial Page Editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. As such, I have had opportunity to write about the Great Lakes Compact, diversion issues, excuse me, and the environment for a couple of years now. Today's discussion comes at a particularly appropriate moment. Just 1 year and about a week ago today, President Bush signed a joint resolution of Congress providing consent to the Great Lakes St. Lawrence River Basin Water Resources Compact. That's the full name of the compact. On Monday, the city of Waukesha, just west of Milwaukee, and just outside the natural basin of the Great Lakes, will start the process of requesting Great Lakes water by holding a public meeting outlining its potential application. I just want to set the stage a little bit before we start the discussion. The compact is designed to provide a comprehensive management framework for achieving sustainable water use and resource protection. It provides guidance for in-basin use and for so-called water diversions outside the basin. Part of the idea behind the compact was to make sure that Great Lakes water wouldn't be shipped off to China or Saudi Arabia or pipelined to Phoenix or Atlanta. After a five-year negotiation, the compact was signed by the eight Great Lakes governors in Milwaukee in December of 2005. In that same year, those states also reached a similar agreement with Ontario and Quebec. Over 2007 and 2008, each of the legislatures of those states ratified the compact, and Congress gave its approval in August and September of 2008. The debate over the compact was particularly intense in Wisconsin and Ohio, I think, largely because geography treats those states a little differently than it does, say, Minnesota, which has almost no land within the basin, and Michigan, for example, which is virtually entirely within the basin. Wisconsin legislators and the task force put together to create implementing legislation also decided to try and get at some implementing details that other states might have put off. They had to grapple with such issues as straddling counties and straddling communities, and you'll hear a bit about that from our speakers today. As such, I think Wisconsin has had and will continue to have a critical role in shaping the practical reality of the compact, how it will work. We're fortunate today to have with us three distinguished and all-star panelists, two of whom played key roles in putting together the legislation. That's Peter McAvoy. If Peter could raise your hand, or you still got a sign in front of you. What am I talking about? He is Vice President, Department of Environmental Health at the 16th Street Community Health Center in Milwaukee, and Dale Shaver, Director of the Waukesha County Department of Parks and Land Use. Finally, we have Todd Ames, Water Division Administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, who will play a key role in determining how the compact will be applied in Wisconsin. We're going to give each of them about 5 minutes for introductory remarks on what the compact means and what it doesn't mean. I'll ask a few more questions. They may ask each other questions, and then we'll open it up to you. I'm under orders here, by the way, to ask you that when you do ask a question, please identify yourselves and your organization. So let's start with Peter. From your perspective, what does the compact mean, and what doesn't it mean?
Well, thank you, Ernie. I really appreciate the opportunity of being here this morning with all of you. As Ernie said, this has been a long process. This has been a long process over many, many years, and so ultimately concluding with the ratification of the Great Lakes Compact. I wanted to emphasize in my opening remarks, though, a couple of important features about the Great Lakes Compact that often gets lost, and what was really driving the drafters of the compact. There is a recognition, first, that it was important to reaffirm some of the basic principles about the Great Lakes and the relationship of the states in managing the Great Lakes. And so first and I think foremost is it reaffirms that it's a public natural resource, that it's held in trust by the Great Lakes states. And it's in, we do that cooperatively with the Canadian provinces of Ontario, Quebec, because it's a shared public resource. One of the more significant things about the compact was the recognition of the drafters, and I should say that Todd Ames was critical to the inside drafting documents throughout this whole process, representing the state of Wisconsin and the Department of Natural Resources. There's a recognition that we have done a very poor job here in the Great Lakes region in managing what is undeniably a world-class resource, and that, frankly, we knew very little about what was going on in the Great Lakes. And so one of the first things and one of the most important things from my perspective and the coalitions that I work with was to put in place a management framework that would gather information on actually what's going on in the Great Lakes, how we use the water, for what purposes, to what extent, and where. So that's an important thing. If you're really going to be able to manage a resource like this, you really have to better understand how it's being used. And when you think about it, here we are in 2009, and we still don't have an effective data system that is cross-cutting, where all of the states are participating along with the Canadian provinces in that regard. The second thing, in what is perhaps from my perspective in the long term is going to be one of the most critical things with the Great Lakes Compact, is a commitment to conserve the waters of the Great Lakes, to actually put in place a management strategy that would lead to water conservation. And one of the important things that's not understood by many people, even within the Great Lakes Basin, let alone around the country or around the world, is that it seemingly is this inexhaustible supply of water. And it is the largest source of surface fresh water in the world, accessible source of fresh water in the world. But it's finite and it's fragile. And so one of the things that we have to take very seriously is we have the capacity to not only lose the Great Lakes by mismanagement, we can really screw it up in a number of different ways, and we've done that, and we've proven that we're quite good at doing that, as far as affecting the overall ecology and the health of the Great Lakes. So from my perspective, some of the best features of the Great Lakes Compact is that we will get into place a system that will more effectively allow us to manage it and then to conserve it and protect it going forward. Now, one of the things which I will undoubtedly get into is there is a recognition by the states that there's a lot of pressure for the moving the water around within the basin and outside of the basin. And so one of the things that the Great Lakes Compact did was it put in place a commitment to prohibit diversions, new or increased diversions of water outside of the basin, except for limited circumstances. And if communities were going to avail themselves of the diversion provisions of the compact, they were going to have to meet new rigorous standards. So those standards are within the compact. Our state spent quite a bit of time, as Ernie referenced, in developing, implementing legislation to try and further refine that, which I think we did a fairly good job on. But a lot of questions still remain. But those are some of the key features about, from my perspective, about the Great Lakes Compact and what it is. What it is not is an attempt by the states to hoard water, to say that nobody can have our water. That's not the perspective that I think that the states took. And it's important to understand it's a forward-looking document that recognizes the considerable responsibilities that we have here in the Great Lakes region to manage this world-class resource. And I'll be happy later on to get into the question and answer. Thank you.
Dale?
Sure. Thank you. As introduced, my name is Dale Shaver. I serve as the Director of Parks and Land Use for Waukesha County. And in that capacity, I have different divisions that deal with water supply on the private well side, septic side. We deal with land use issues, the development of Waukesha County, particularly in the unincorporated areas. And before I go any further, maybe help some of the other panel members, can I just get a show? Who's all from Wisconsin? Anybody north of Wisconsin that we can blame the weather on? If you don't mind, I'm just going to step away from the microphone for a second. I'll talk loud enough that I can pick it up. But I just want to kind of frame a reference where we are geographically and why this issue was of concern to Waukesha County.
Actually, if you can grab the other microphone, you can just hold it. It'll just lock on the cable.
Yeah.
Obviously, the state of Wisconsin, divided into different basins. So the Lake Superior Basin, everything from up Superior Ashland, the sear line will flow up to Lake Superior drainage-wise. This whole gray area in the Lake Michigan Basin, or in-basin transfers, if you will, or use of water, will flow to the Great Lakes. And everything, obviously, to the west of that will go to the ultimately to the Mississippi River. Waukesha County itself is a 24 by 24 square mile block of space right in the Milwaukee metropolitan statistical area. We have a population today of about 377,000 people. There are 37 municipalities. There are 12 towns, 8 cities, and 18 villages, I think, are the numbers. But I wanted to show this to you now because one of the challenges that the county had was this line hits basically every definition described in the compact. We have in-basin communities, meaning the whole community was within the area. We actually have straddling communities, where the community, like a city of New Berlin, who just received an application or submitted an application to get water, and other communities outside the basin that were in the straddling community, and you'll hear a lot more about the city of Waukesha. And we also had an anomaly, and that is we had a community that actually straddled the county. So in that case, part of that municipality would be in a straddling county and part of it would not. So what happens in those situations? Ernie's comments earlier about my involvement in the compact, probably a little overstated and generous in that I think Todd and the staff and Peter and there were a whole host of others that really took this language and worked on it very well in what I call the Wisconsin way, where we just simply didn't take a piece of legislation and rubber stamp it and move it on. There was really a concerted effort amongst science, in my opinion, to take a look at what does this mean for Wisconsin in the long term and start analyzing that issue and looking forward. And it was those things like the village of McGonigal that was straddling county, and we needed to navigate through some of those issues. One other piece before I sit back down that'll help frame this a little bit from Waukesha County's perspective. Anybody see this before, this graphic? If you look at the cross-section, Lake Michigan is over here. The divide, if you will, the city of Milwaukee, the divide would be in this here area. Waukesha County would go all the way out. The full extent would be about 20 miles from the lake. What's really important here is this red line, which represents a shale layer, which confines or separates the upper groundwater from the lower groundwater. Okay, and that's scientifically that's pretty important for a lot of different reasons. But when we look at most of Waukesha County, most of your private wells for citizens or shallow municipal wells do not penetrate into that shale layer. So we're somewhere up to maybe 300 feet in depth. So we need to pay attention to how much water we're dragging out of that shallow aquifer in Waukesha County, because it will impact shallow water resources, lakes and streams and wetlands, etc. Most of the municipal wells, when you hear a municipal well, those municipal wells, if they're not shallow in nature, will actually go below that 500-foot, approximately 500-foot threshold down into that deep aquifer. And that's the issue, okay, from a sustainable water supply for the city of Waukesha. The city of Waukesha, much like the communities in Milwaukee County historically, used that deep aquifer. And because the community grew faster and the demand for water grew faster than the ability to sustain itself, you have this drawdown occur. And the more the groundwater draws down, the deeper you have to go with that well. And then you start picking up chemical issues, warm water issues, and then you start getting into the radium issues. Why this is also important, this red line or this the shale layer, is if you go to western Waukesha County, and it's about the western third of the county, water actually can infiltrate, call it out in the Oconomowoc area, water can actually infiltrate and get through that shale layer and begin to recharge not only the shallow groundwater, but also that deep aquifer. Okay, but it just the time it takes and the recharge level and the capability to get through there and around just just doesn't keep up with the demand for the water supply. Okay, so as Milwaukee in the 60s began to get off of that deep aquifer water use, you started seeing the groundwater, much like up in the Green Bay area, you started seeing the groundwater deep aquifer beginning to rebound, right, recovers. But as communities west of the into Waukesha County began to tap and those demands begin to grow, you saw that Kona Depression begin to shift from under Milwaukee County out to the eastern third of Waukesha County. Okay? Does that make sense so far? All right. I'm going to just sit back down. So in Peter's opening comments, I think it surprises people that here we are in the year 2009 and we're still grappling with this issue. And it's just, I think it's testimony to what we have not known about water supply and the impact of groundwater resources. In 1996, Waukesha County was the first county in the state to develop a comprehensive land use plan. And you think about 1996, that is the first time a county took a look at a comprehensive land use plan. Why is that? It's just how things have developed in communities. When I look historically at Waukesha County, Waukesha County was a recreational resource for most of Milwaukee and Chicago, where we have about 50 named lakes in the county, and people would come and recreate, they would use the water supply, etc. And as that began to grow, we saw most of our growth, or if people would call sprawl growth, in the 1970s and 1980s. And that's where we had about 60% of our growth on services, meaning sewer and water, and about 40% of the development was off sewer and water. That's now changed since we've had our development plan. We're now about 80% of our growth is actually being pushed into those urban areas. Again, because you want to preserve resources, you want to have, there's transportation issues, there are housing issues that you want to address. Unfortunately, what it begins to create is, as you're creating compact development styles and you're compressing your population in those areas, it's greater demand on that water supply for those deep aquifers. Okay? So Waukesha County is kind of at the heart of this issue. I was asked to participate primarily from a science and a land use standpoint in the formulation of language in the compact. Scientifically, we've looked at this issue through a regional water supply planning process, and I really do believe that this issue can be resolved, protecting both the groundwater resources, protecting over the long haul, as Peter mentioned, the rare commodity of the Great Lakes, and do it where there's a business component. Somebody asked me before the meeting, well, how do we know that if water goes beyond the Great Lakes Divide to a community, that it won't start going out to Jefferson County and out to Madison? When you look at the sheer economics of it, it just can't work. To be able to run water with that type of return flow mechanism, the dollars just don't play out, which is why historically you haven't seen sewer extensions to the level that you normally would have had.
Dale, we can get to that in a second. Okay.
All right.
Todd, do you want to?
Sure. I'll just kind of echo a couple of themes that have already been mentioned, particularly Peter's, and then talk just very briefly about some of the components of the implementing legislation in Wisconsin to set the stage for both Ernie's questions and yours. again, to echo what Peter said, you know, one of the things, if you take nothing else away from this discussion today, please take away, this is not just about diversions. I can tell you, if all this was about was the issue of diversions of water out of the Great Lakes, I would have assigned somebody else in the Water Division to deal with this. This is a really a revolutionary document, in my view. This is a compact, a contract between the eight Great Lakes states of how to, and an agreement with the two Canadian provinces to on how to comprehensively manage the most significant freshwater resource on the planet. It took an enormous amount of time. We met, just to get it to the governor's desks, we met over 100 days, full days in person. We had over 400 conference calls. And the final draft that was approved of the compact was somewhere in the low hundreds of drafts. It was an enormous undertaking because we were developing a sustainable water management plan for the Great Lakes Basin. And again, as Peter mentioned, the way I always try to put it in context, fundamentally what the compact says is that how people use their water in places like Duluth and Green Bay and Milwaukee have an impact on people in Detroit and Buffalo and Toronto and Cleveland, and as a result, they ought to have a say in it. That's a pretty revolutionary concept, and some folks will tell you it didn't go as far as they would like it to. Some folks wish it was more comprehensive. Some folks wish it did this or did that, but that fundamental concept is there, and that idea that we should actually manage the resources of the Great Lakes Basin as if it was all connected is now in place, and that's hard to do in government with regulations. We're not very good at actually paying attention to science when we're passing laws. So the other point I'll mention, the monitoring and reporting, not a sexy issue, but really, really critical. The fact that we are actually now gathering data across the Great Lakes Basin that'll be housed in one location to look at how much water we're using, which sectors are using it, how are they using it, is it being used efficiently, is just, it's data we just didn't have. And it's really hard to know where you're going if you don't know where you are. So I think those are some of the key components. The piece relative to diversions obviously is significant, and it was particularly significant in Wisconsin when we had a couple of communities that were kind of the poster children for the diversion issue, and one of which, Waukesha, remains so. And our agency's right in the middle of how to grapple with those questions and can certainly address any questions relative to that. But those are important things. Shifting just quickly to hit a couple of key points on the implementing legislation in Wisconsin. There was the compact is a framework document. It sets out a framework for sustainable water management system. It says that certain very large water withdrawal requests and/or diversion requests would go to a regional body for review. But how this was going to be done in each of the individual states, much of that detail was left up to how it was going to be drafted in state implementing legislation. And it makes sense if you think about it. We had to put together the only way you can get a compact in place is everybody has to agree to every word of it. There cannot be a word changed in that contract from state to state. As you might imagine, we knew going to state legislatures and telling them, hey, we got this really neat new document that's never been done probably anywhere in the world, let alone in the United States, and you're really going to love it, and it's this new regulatory scheme, but, oh, by the way, you can't touch a word of it, was going to have a great deal of difficulty getting to the legislature if, quite honestly, we didn't provide some flexibility on some key areas in terms of how those states implemented it. So there are kind of sidebars in the compact from a regional standpoint, and then how you did it statewide was up to the implementing legislation. We were the first state to actually grab hold of that and do it in a meaningful way and put in place some very detailed specifics to our implementing legislation. So you look at somewhere like New York, they simply ratified the compact and had language that said, in terms of how we're going to do it in the state, we're going to hand it over to the New York Department of Environmental Quality and they'll figure out the rules. We, on the other hand, spent a great deal of time and energy and passed a 173-page bill for how we were going to do it in Wisconsin. A couple of key points, and then I'll stop, and then we can move to questions. Things where we went further than what the compact did in terms of the state of Wisconsin. We are really trying to grapple with this question of water conservation. So we have specific language that talks about how there can be mandatory requirements in terms of water conservation within the Great Lakes Basin in Wisconsin, which is, you see from the map, is about a third of the state. The compact says you have to have a water conservation plan for the portion of your state that is within the Great Lakes Basin, but it can be entirely voluntary. There's no requirements for anything mandatory. Our implementing legislation says that we can, in fact, impose mandatory requirements. And what we've proposed is a tiered system where there would be greater requirements for larger in-basin water withdrawals within the Great Lakes Basin, for requests for diversions to so-called straddling communities, the New Berlins of the world, and then an even higher threshold for so-called communities within straddling counties, the Waukesha example. So that's a nuance and a difference in terms of our implementing legislation. We also have statewide registering and reporting. So we are trying to gather all of this data not only in the Great Lakes Basin but across the state so that we will have a real comprehensive handle on how much water we're using across the Great Lakes Basin. Our permits go down to 100,000 gallons a day, which is the smallest high-capacity well in the state of Wisconsin. As an example, Waukesha is looking at somewhere between 10 to 12 million gallons a day. We will require permits going all the way down to 100,000 gallons a day. And there's an increasing requirements in individual permits will be required for any new or increased withdrawal within the basin of more than a million gallons per day. Sounds like a lot of water. It's really not. But we're going to have a comprehensive system for how we manage that water. The other piece I'll mention, and then I'll stop, is because it is a key element to our implementing legislation, doesn't exist anywhere else in the Great Lakes Basin. We're also requiring water supply plans. What we're saying is that what the law says is that if you are going to make a request for a diversion, either for straddling community or straddling county, you immediately are going to have to submit a water supply plan that demonstrates how you are using the water that you're using currently efficiently and how you propose to use it, the new water, efficiently in the future based on a water supply plan. To try to connect the water supply planning to wastewater planning, which we've had in the state for 30 years, the bottom line here is to try to connect the whole cycle of water use in a system that can actually be managed. For any newer increased withdrawal within the basin, within Wisconsin, of a million gallons or more, you're going to have that water supply plan. And as of 2025, every community in the state of Wisconsin, whether they're in the Great Lakes Basin or not, will be required to have this water supply plan if you have more than 10,000 people in your community. So that's also a new, fairly wide-sweeping mechanism for really getting at comprehensive water management as part of the compact and as part of our state implementing legislation. So I could certainly talk about a lot of things, including diversion requests to the questions, but I'll stop at this point and turn back over to Ernie.
Thank you. As Todd pointed out, and so did the other speakers, the compact is not just about diversions, but certainly diversions are going to be one of the most controversial elements of what's as we move forward. And Waukesha right now is sort of the poster child because it's the first city that will go through the full process of approval by the other Great Lakes states. What do you hope to see in an application from the city of Waukesha, and under what conditions should water be
should go to a community on the other side of the basin anywhere.
Let's start with Todd.
There's an easy one.
You have 27 seconds.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's fascinating how much attention this thing has gotten in terms of the city of Waukesha. It is an important issue. We certainly want to handle it comprehensively. But it is also striking just how much attention this has gotten. The Canadian Parliament actually had a special session on the city of Waukesha, to give you an idea.
Maybe the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah. So it's just amazing. There was a five-part series in your paper that was done in the middle of our compact negotiations. I showed up at this meeting, and there's people from all over the Great Lakes states and the provinces. Every single person in the room had read every word of the series. I mean, it was just kind of amazing to me. So a lot of attention. Waukesha has a very, very high bar to get over, and it'll be very interesting to see whether or not they can achieve it. The mayor likes to talk about how he's going to have a platinum application, and it better be platinum throughout, because they're going to have to demonstrate that they are able to return. The compact actually says that they have to return all of the water back to the basin minus some amount for consumptive loss. I would suggest that, and that's just one piece of the requirements, I would suggest that their bar is going to be much higher, and they'd better be able to come in and articulate something along the lines of what New Berlin already did, where they were able to demonstrate not only were they returning all their water back to the basin. In the case of New Berlin, they're actually returning more water back to the basin than they were taking, than they're taking over the divide, for reasons I won't spend time on here. Before you even get to the question of the method of bringing the water back to the basin, there's been a lot of controversy about Waukesha's proposal, or at least we think proposal. It is interesting they're having this meeting on Monday. They're nowhere near submitting an actual application to us. So we do not have an application in-house in the DNR, and all signs are it's going to be sometime after the first of the year when they do. Before we even get to the question of can they take the water from one place that provides it, whether it's Milwaukee or Oak Creek or Racine or somewhere, and then return it back to a surface water, which is one of the options that they're talking about, a tributary to the Great Lakes, they're going to have to demonstrate that that is the most cost-effective and environmentally friendly approach to returning it to the Great Lakes. Even before they get over that threshold, they also have to demonstrate that they don't have an alternative, a practical alternative for getting the water supply that they need within the existing basin that they're in, which is the Mississippi River Basin. So they've got a number of things they're going to have to demonstrate, and there's a whole decision-making standard within the compact, and then there are more extensive details in the Wisconsin implementing legislation. So it's going to be they've got to go through a lot to get through our review process in the state of Wisconsin, and then they're going to have to get to the regional body and convince eight governors that it's a good idea as well.
Peter?
The one of the points that Todd mentioned, I think, is which is going to be very important to understand, is what are the current needs of a community? In this case, in our case, in Wisconsin, first case would be Waukesha's needs for water. So it's not absolutely clear right now what the extent of their current and future needs for water supply really are or is. And so demonstrating that and then looking at, which is one of the first thresholds that Todd is mentioning, is what alternatives do they have to meet those water supply needs. And it's going to be important to understand what the community is that we're talking about. The city of Waukesha and its water utility currently serves 22 square miles. There is some discussion about almost doubling the land area that might potentially be served by a diversion. In the minds of some, that issue in and of itself is questionable. But if you can demonstrate that you have an existing need, what the extent of that need is over the long term, and then what's the alternatives that are available to you to serve those needs. And under the compact, and here this is an important point for folks to understand, in the difference between the framework of the Great Lakes Compact language itself and then the language that we adopted in Wisconsin. You really have to show that there's no reasonable alternative to meet the water supply needs of the community. And so in order to qualify for putting in a request for a diversion. So that's going to be a very important threshold for the community to lay out. And one of the things that our coalition has been pushing for is to, and I should say at this point, our coalition is not against diversions per se. It's really trying to effectively implement the Great Lakes Compact. So that's the most important thing to us, to do it and do it right. So when we go through this process and you consider what the alternatives are, we're really asking for the full range of alternatives to be put on the table so that everyone can understand what's at stake and what the differences are and what the advantages and disadvantages of different alternatives are. I would then submit to you that some of the folks outside of the state of Wisconsin are looking at this language very carefully because they're thinking that if there is a reasonable alternative for a community other than a diversion, then that's what ought to be pursued. So there's a difference between what we might decide in Wisconsin with Waukesha and what the state of Wisconsin may advance to the other states for consideration. So that this threshold question that Todd's referencing is a very important one and a very significant one. The other thing that we didn't talk about, which I think is also one of the great hallmarks of the Great Lakes Compact, is it really for the first time provides some process and some opportunity for the public to be involved in decisions that heretofore decisions have been made around the Great Lakes, whether it was at the local level, state level, federal level. Oftentimes the public was not intricately involved in those. The public is going to be involved in this. It isn't just the Canadian Parliament that's going to get involved in this. The public is really going to be watching very carefully. And so the stakes are high. The mayor of Waukesha, and I take him at his word, Mayor Nelson, that he's going to, if they put in an application for a diversion, it's going to be at the platinum form because the standards are quite rigorous, and I think he appreciates that. And we take him at his word that he really is going to try and do a great job in that regard.
Dale?
I agree. It's a neat analysis. Wisconsin in 1999 passed what we call our smart growth law. It's a comprehensive planning law, and it requires every municipality in the state to have a land use plan in place by the year by January 1st of 2010 if you're going to stay in the regulatory business. Kind of a landmark piece of legislation along that I think can dovetail in real well with the compact. So now you have communities like the city of Waukesha or all the other communities, including Waukesha County, that have taken some time to take a look at where are we now? What is our current need for water resources? What's our planned population projections? How large is that service area going to be growing, if at all? So I think there's a real opportunity here for the city of Waukesha to submit, or any community looking for a interbasin transfer, to demonstrate that need based upon a comprehensive plan or a long-term look at demographic growth and change. The other piece that two pieces I would be looking for, I would think, would be a sound conservation strategy. You know, you're seeing an emergence amongst local units of government and businesses looking at energy efficiency. I think water conservation has to get to that level as well. That just because there's a commodity there or it's viewed historically as a commodity, it can't be viewed that way anymore. So if you're going to be using a water resource, whether it's a groundwater resources or from the Great Lakes, that there's an effective conservation strategy in place. You've thought about that and the public's been involved. And then the last is, as I mentioned earlier, the economics of it, that you have a sound return flow process. If that's the direction that you end up going, can it work? How does it work financially? How does it work environmentally on the receiving water side of things? So I think those are probably the key pieces that need to be looked at.
Thank you. I have more questions, but I'd like to open it up to the audience now. Green shirt guy. Could you please identify yourself and your organization?
Yeah, Tom Henry with the Toledo Blade. As you and everyone else knows, that the big picture objective of the compact is to keep water in the Great Lakes region, not let the Great Lakes region economically decay or the resource be depleted and accommodate other parts of the country and other parts of the world, as we talked about earlier. But yet, Waukesha is a sprawling bedroom community of Milwaukee. How do you reconcile what's at stake with Waukesha in the big picture, whether you're living outside the basin and seeing this landmark document here, wondering why a sprawling bedroom community of Milwaukee is being accommodated with water, or if you're a member of the Council of Canadians and we're suspicious of U.S. motives all along, wondering if the compact was really a vehicle for the states of Wisconsin and Ohio to accommodate their sprawling bedroom communities.
Who wants to take that on?
There's a couple of things relative to the diversion request, and I think it does raise all those public policy questions and more. But the first thing is keep in mind what the compact does first and foremost is it bans diversions anywhere else with these limited exceptions. And those are exceptions to the ban that has to be proven. So you don't get to, because you are a community within a straddling county, that doesn't give you Great Lakes water. It just says you are entitled to make the request. And there's a rigorous process for going through that. And in the case of the if you are a community within a straddling county like Waukesha, not only does it, you have to make that case in the host jurisdiction, but you've got to make that case at the regional body level. Both with an actual vote from the eight Great Lakes states and with prior notice and consultation to the Canadians.
This is a quick follow, Todd, and along these lines. The strength of any document, whether you're talking about a local zoning ordinance or a water law here or anything, the strength of anything depends on the number of exemptions you grant. And this is essentially an exemption that you're granting to communities. I mean, I know what you're. I've written about the compact since its formation and going back to the Nova Group in 1998, it bans diversions outside, but that's what outsiders are going to say is how many exemptions are you going to allow within the
compact? Well, and I think that's going to be an interesting question, and we'll see. We'll see what happens with. I mean, you know, Waukesha is going to be the first test case. We'll see just how. Suffice it to say, if Waukesha submits a two-page document that says we'd like water, what do you think? And we say swell, and a lot of the states say cool, go for it. Then I think it would be safe to say that we've created a rather gaping hole in terms of an exemption. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. You know, I think one of the other questions that we're going to have to ask carefully is And I thought New Berlin was an interesting case on this one. It's already been approved. It was a situation where they were dealing with a radium compliance issue. It was not a large amount of water. But one of the key things about their particular application is they already had a third of the city that was being provided Lake Michigan water because they were in the Great Lakes Basin. They got another third in the middle of the city to provide water, and all of that was part of a wastewater treatment system that returned all the water that they use in New Berlin every day back to the Great Lakes Basin. So what they were able to demonstrate is that they were going to replace water that had a known carcinogen in it with Great Lakes water and return all of it back to the basin, not only because they also have some groundwater and other sources from the western third. They were actually going to be returning more water back to the basin than they took over every day. What raises an interesting question there in my mind as I looked at that is, if you've got a decent water conservation plan, if you're addressing a public health issue, if you can demonstrate that there's actually on a daily basis no return, no loss of water to the basin, is it really a diversion? And I think that's an interesting question. You know, what is a diversion? I think we're going to see, you know, in the case of New Berlin, I would argue that their bar was really, really high, and that I'm very, very comfortable with the decision that was made relative to New Berlin. It'll be interesting to see how that gets applied in a situation like Waukesha.
What? Let me ask you, the guy behind you.
Yeah, I'm Dave Tenenbaum from Watt Files, and it's interesting to talk about Waukesha, but everybody's noticed there's an intense water shortage in the U.S. Southwest, accentuated by a drought, accentuated by population and economic explosions. How bulletproof is the Great Lakes Compact, which doesn't sound like it is actually a treaty, when tens and 20 millions of people start saying, we're running out of water, we're going to have to move, give us some of your beautiful Great Lakes?
See, I think that the issues of how we handle the first request for diversion are going to be really important to answer that issue. And whether or not, in the earlier question, about whether or not we're going to blow a huge hole in the overall framework of the Great Lakes Compact is open to question. I don't think we are. I don't think that the states went through all of this just to, you know, just put words on paper. But it is going to be telling how we handle this. And this has been a question before the states for decades, really, about how we handle ourselves and how we use and manage this world-class resource. And at the same time, say to others, we know what we're doing, we're protecting it, we're going to sustain it, and by the way, you don't get to use it. So these are cases of first impression under this compact, and they're going to be very important. And that's why I think what Todd was going through with New Berlin, why New Berlin is actually a fairly unique situation. And they could have requested water for the western third of its city, and it did not do that. That was important for our coalition to understand that they were not just – this was not a whole-scale diversion request to expound and expand economic development opportunities to the western third of its community. It
You're
was real.
New Berlin.
Oh, I'm referring to New Berlin. Mm-hmm. All right. So that was a very important point for us, and they adopted water conservation measures that we're following up with them on. So it and the return flow issues and everything else, they have unique situations. But Waukesha.
How bulletproof is this thing?
Well, if we take Waukesha's as an example, then that application really better be a fine one, because the scrutiny that they're going to be put under, not just by our coalition but throughout the region, to go at the heart of what you're saying, is serious. Mm-hmm. And this is not a land development scheme. If a community in Waukesha or in Wisconsin or anywhere else is proposing to have major new land development opportunities, annexation, sprawling development, all of that, with Lake Michigan water or any of the other Great Lakes, then it's not going to work, because we will not be able to say to the Southwest, you can't have it, you can't do it, because we'll have a double standard. And that's what we're trying to work against.
But it's also why it's important to really stress it is not just about how we handle the diversions. It is also equally important how we handle sustainable water use within the Great Lakes Basin. This, you know, nothing's bulletproof. I mean, obviously, you could Congress could repeal the compact.
Right.
But the point here is that under the old system, what we basically were saying was we were trying to say no to any diversions unless one of the governors – I mean, you could say yes if all the governors agreed in the Great Lakes Basin. On what basis would you say no? There wasn't any. What's the time frame? There wasn't any. What's the process review? There wasn't any. What's the application? There wasn't any. And on top of that, what we were telling people is, so we got this arbitrary system of deciding whether or not you can take water over the divide. And, oh, by the way, what we're going to do within the basin is whatever the hell we want. That was not a good system. So, how we handle these first few years of implementation are obviously going to be critical.
First to you, and then to you.
Can I just wrap up on one other thing?
Oh.
Ernie?
Yeah,
sure.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Actually, it's kind of an answer for both questions. The Waukesha and the New Berlin cases, I think, are exactly where you'd want to test this, and you want to see how bulletproof the compact is. I believe one of the best components of the compact, in, as I call it, the Wisconsin way, the enabling legislation, required these water management plans or water supply plans. That's exactly what New Berlin did, and that's exactly why New Berlin made the proper scientific decision not to extend water to its western third, because the soils there didn't support that kind of development. The density of the development pattern that already is there can't sustain it. It already has a nice balance of shallow water use in private wells and septic that recharge that aquifer, so it's a sustainable source already. So there's nothing that would demand, nor ever should, because of its physical condition of the soils, that you would ever develop that area. The city of Waukesha is the exact same. When we look at the city of Waukesha, it's projected to grow less than 11% between now and the year 2035. And why isn't it going to sprawl? Because the area around the city is primarily developed. The land use pattern is pretty well shaped. And there were conscious decisions to have those land uses because of the environmental features, because of the soils, because of a number of other components, that those are more scattered or large lot development that have private well and septics. So economically, it doesn't make sense to extend it beyond the city boundaries. Getting back to that water supply piece, and I'm trying to be real quick here, the regional Southeast Wisconsin worked on for the last, I think it was about 4 years, Todd, on a water supply plan. Mm-hmm. And in there, that planning process with leading water supply folks, USGS folks, water utility folks, planning folks, environmental advocates, all looked at that issue and said, should Waukesha County, the whole eastern third of Waukesha County, receive water for economic development? And the answer was absolutely not. Because it's not sustainable, it would certainly not fly past the true intent of the compact. So I think the safeguards are truly in place because of the way the enabling legislation was written in Wisconsin, and the sheer fact of reality of a land use pattern and sound planning that got you to that point. Okay.
Potential threat of a WTO challenge, maybe somewhere down the line, if a large bottler, say, wants to locate on one of the cities, you know, bordering one of the, like Michigan, perhaps, you know, the history of water struggles in Wisconsin, of course. Has there been any discussion about whether that might actually be a threat somewhere down the line?
We have looked at it in the state of Wisconsin. We're confident that we've got we're not worried about that threat at all, at least in the state of Wisconsin. Part of that is that we've got a whole series of requirements at both state and local level that make it very difficult for folks to come in and try to invoke some sort of, you know, international law standard to be able to get access to the water. As an example, water bottlers in this state, if they want to get operate a bottled water facility using groundwater, we have the highest standards in the country for reviewing any request for a bottled water facility. As a result, there have been no bottled water facility requests since that law was passed in 2004.
I guess, sorry, Jamie Workman, author of Heart of Dryness.
Hey, Jamie. It's been a while.
I'm similar. I'm from California, and I totally respect how you guys have put this together. And I'm not even worried. I don't think there will be, you know, pressure-fed diversions. But one thing you may have addressed or may not have is, never mind the bottlers, about 500 times that amount of water is leaving the state every day when you ship out grain, when you ship out milk, when you ship out any produce that's grown with this water.
Here.
In the terms of virtual water. Now, shouldn't, if you're going to keep the water here, shouldn't all that water, you know, food and produce be consumed locally as well? Otherwise, you're shipping it out. It's leaving the state. It's gone forever, and it's evaporating.
We'll give this one to Peter.
We have grappled with that, obviously, for some time, and I think that the way that it's been handled in the compact reflects the history of the Great Lakes region, and tried to distinguish between some different uses. So, yes, that is a point of fact, but I guess my comeback to that is getting a better handle on what we're doing with our water and these provisions that are in the compact about managing the water and better understanding what's happening to the water resource overall. I mean, in the compact itself, there's reference to climate change. There could be huge impacts with climate change on the Great Lakes, and some believe that that's already happening. We lose enormous amounts of water through evaporation. And if the climate really starts to change, we will have significant more impacts than anything that we're doing right now with the water, right, as we use it. So I think we're going to have to be far more vigilant and better at managing the water and how we conserve it over time. So it's not that we're not aware of the fact that some products are made with water and are actually shipped out of the basin, out of the state. There isn't right now.
No.
Well, that's a. I mean, some could raise that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Where I think the interesting question there, I think, Jamie, is going to be how we deal with this once we have a better handle on how we're using the water for which purposes. How do we handle that? And my expectation is it's probably not going to be handled under the auspices of the compact, in part because it's definitely a food product, et cetera. But also because of I think there is a growing awareness for how we manage that water within the individual states. We are right now looking at new legislation, new groundwater quantity legislation in the state of Wisconsin. One of the things we're talking about is this whole idea of where the water budget is overdrawn, what do we do? And how do we deal with that situation? And how do we deal with it in a reasonable use context instead of the prior appropriation that we have in the western part of the country? What I think hopefully we'll get to, though, is a system for managing it. And in that context, I think those questions come up. If you've overdrawn the water budget and you know, one of the big reasons for overdrawing that water budget is that a whole bunch of that use is being used for products that are going out of the state of Wisconsin. How do you grapple with that? I'm not quite sure how we're going to do that, but I can tell you that the broader subject matter is definitely on the plate and being looked at in Wisconsin, because we have finally gotten to the point, another good thing about the compact, we're recognizing that we need to pay attention to water quantity. I mean, we created just 3 years ago in the water division a water use section. never had one because you were in Wisconsin. Why? What? We got all the water we need. What are you talking about?
Yeah. What kind of opposition do you get from the cities? Like in the case here, Milwaukee. I would imagine, and I don't. And out of fairness, I don't know Waukesha that well, but I'm envisioning it, and from what I've read about it, being a suburban community of Milwaukee, and in Toledo's like a mega water provider to the suburbs. They at least get some money, some revenue from this because they charge everyone they supply twice the water rates that they do people in the city. So if I was a public official in Milwaukee, I would be saying, despite what Dale's saying about not economic development, who are we kidding? I mean, you're going to have economic development by having the water issue removed there, because you're going to have more housing developments, more businesses, and if you've got this issue resolved, why don't you not have this diversion in Waukesha and come back to Milwaukee, bring your people here, bring your business and everything else? What kind of feedback do you get from Milwaukee?
You haven't had that one, Peter.
I can answer that one.
Yeah, it's pretty significant, and it's on from the issues that you're raising. Those are front and center for the city of Milwaukee. And Milwaukee, just to give some background to those who are not from around here, has a large capacity for supplying water because originally it built a system that would have accommodated a much larger population, had a lot of water-dependent industry. You think about our breweries, and a number of the breweries are gone, tanneries, et cetera. So it has a huge capacity to supply water, and it does supply water to many of the suburbs in the surrounding area of Milwaukee, and has for a number of years. And recently,
that are within the basin.
That are within the basin, and that's a really important point. And they then agreed to sell water to New Berlin for water that would be supplied outside of the basin. But they did it also with a sidebar agreement about dealing with some of these economic issues. So they worked out an arrangement with New Berlin, aside from the sale of the water, about how New Berlin would try and accommodate some of the issues that Milwaukee is concerned about. I think Waukesha, frankly, if Waukesha is going to deal with the city of Milwaukee, as it says that it would like to do, the deals, the negotiations are going to be quite extensive and quite significant. And the Common Council's made that quite clear, not just the mayor.
I'm not a panelist, but let me just throw something in. New Berlin worked out a deal of in addition to paying for the water, of a one-time $1.5 million fee, like a cooperation fee, it was called. So Milwaukee will probably be looking for similar things from a Waukesha. I also want to clarify something. Waukesha is not exactly a sprawling bedroom community. New Berlin is much more like that. Waukesha is an older community with an urban center and neighborhoods. In many areas, it looks just like Milwaukee does. So it's a little different animal than, say, New Berlin or a Brookfield or a Delafield would be.
I guess what I'm throwing out here, though, is there's enough concern about the industrial Great Lakes. You're looking at Milwaukee, Chicago, Buffalo, Detroit, Cleveland, big cities that are on the decline, that continue to be decaying. And isn't there an argument to be made that if you're going to grant exemptions like this, that you're accelerating the decay? Because we all know that water and sewer is a big component of infrastructure. And is this accelerating a problem that's already pretty bad in our region?
It's a huge issue, and it isn't just, as you're saying appropriately, it's not just the city of Milwaukee, but it is a major, major issue for the city of Milwaukee. It would be for the city of Racine or Kenosha. But Buffalo it's Toledo. It's exactly. And that is what they're grappling with right now. The city of Milwaukee has set up a process to develop information to deal with the very issues that you're talking about in terms of ultimately negotiating with somebody for future water sales. What would you put on the table? So it's a very, very big issue.
We've got about 5 minutes left. I just want
Just the other thing to remember, don't lose sight of it relative to Waukesha and New Berlin. I can't crystal ball what will happen in the future in terms of other requests for exceptions from the ban, but I can tell you that today I would make this statement that there's no way in the world Waukesha or New Berlin would have even gotten to the starting gate if they did not have a public health problem with their existing water supply. We shouldn't lose track of that. I mean, if Waukesha had come in and said, you know, we'd really like to double our population, it'd be swell, and it'd be a lot easier if we had Lake Michigan water, there'd be a bunch of people to say, get lost.
But you had a similar scenario in Lowell, Indiana, too, didn't you? Groundwater?
Yeah.
Yep.
Pre-compact.
And that was denied.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. So
they had an alternative water supply.
Yep. They did have an alternative water supply. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I have a question relates to the fact that New Berlin is returning, you know, some of their more than they're taking out. This the compact does not have any sort of cap and trade formula where a city like New Berlin could pump the daylights out of the wells on the Mississippi Basin side, and then sell that credit to Waukesha.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Right.
No.
Oh, okay.
Right.
No, there is no cap and trade.
You know, I did. You know, you're raising something that I think is there are provisions in the Great Lakes Compact about commingling of water, mm-hmm. and we're supposed to minimize commingling.
Right.
In fact, we shouldn't do it at all to the extent that we can. So, and we all take that very seriously as well. So it isn't just, there was a concern about invasive species and everything else. What would you be bringing in water from other basins to the Great Lakes? So, but it's more than that. And so I think that it isn't that, at least I think for our coalition, we really do want to see if these things are going to be set up, that it's a cycle, that it's Lake Michigan water that's being taken out, that's being used, and it's being returned, and it's not being commingled with a lot of other water from other places. So there's an issue there, not just water loss.
Because there, as I understand it, there potentially would be some commingling because the under certain flood stage conditions in the Underwood Creek, which is what if there were flooding issues there, the water could all be shot into the Fox River,
right.
In which case it goes into the Mississippi Basin.
Right.
We need to wrap this up. Any final comments anybody wants to make? No.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much to the panelists.
Great questions.